Hi, Kenzo Esquivel. Welcome to KABU Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Kenzo Esquivel is a graduate student and research assistant in agroecology and sustainable agriculture. Tell us just a little bit about your various roles at the university and your work.
So my name is Kenzo Esquivel. I'm a fourth-year PhD candidate in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy, and Management at UC Berkeley, and I'm also an elected head steward of our Union of Graduate Student Instructors, Readers, and Tutors, UAW-2865. In my academic capacities, I'm currently serving as a graduate research fellow working on my dissertation research, which tries to understand both the socio-political and economic constraints that farmers face in adopting sustainable management practices, and then how those practices impact soil health and agricultural production. So currently, I'm a researcher moving forward on my dissertation work, but in the past, I've also been a teaching assistant and taught classes. I've TA'd classes and will TA classes again in the future.
You're local, 2865, in which you're a leader, but the union, it seems to me, is like the Wobblies, who always told the arresting police, "We are all leaders." I think that's what you're trying to develop. The local is one of three United Auto Workers locals that has a total of 48,000 members. They're grad student teachers, researchers, teaching assistants, tutors, and other important roles in the University of California system. And they are now all on strike together with the joint bargaining team. It's the largest strike in the history of American higher ed, and what happens at the University of California will set the standard for over 2 million, mostly young people, who do this work in universities across the country. Further, a successful strike at UC will surely strengthen today all worker rebellions of the young, especially, of course, highly educated workers doing three jobs to get by, like at Amazon, Starbucks, groceries, so many others. Kenzo, tell us about the strike at the whole University of California system. Why are you 48,000 young people mostly striking?
Yeah, there are four different bargaining units that came together for this, represented by three different locals. There are the academic student employees, so that encompasses the graduate student instructors or TAs, teaching assistants, readers, and tutors. We have a newly formed union of student researchers called Student Researchers United, which will newly cover the graduate student who is doing kind of these research type appointments under a contract. And we also have UAW 5810, which represents postdoctoral scholars and academic staff researchers. And so what was really unique about this moment was our contract cycles lined up, and we really were talking to each other about our issues, our top line challenges that we were wanting to highlight in our contract campaigns, and realized that the struggles we faced were largely the same, which comes down to things like cost of living in California. All of our UC campuses tend to be in some of the most expensive places in the country, and our stipends across those different job titles were simply not enough to live in the places that we work and teach. So that was one very easy place to really find common cause to be negotiating and pushing on the university with united front to say that this is no longer tenable and there needs to be something that changes. And so wages were an obvious place, demanding that we can afford housing and not be rent burdened in the places that we live. There are other really important issues that have kind of come to the surface, including fighting for our international students and our student parents. Part of the reason that I think we're really passionate about this campaign and moving it forward is that we're really fighting for the future of public higher education here. Like, we want our institutions of public higher education to be places that are accessible to all types of people, regardless of your generational access to wealth, depending on like your marital situation or whether you have kids. Like, anyone should be able to pursue an education at these places. So I think there's these core groups that we're fighting for in this contract campaign. And then also something that we really tried to get into this year, and again, this was a demand across all of our bargaining units, was to get the UC to actually commit to sustainable transit for workers to campus. We know that across the state, we are 48,000 workers, and some people are forced to live really far from campus to find affordable rents. And so we know that we're having a pretty significant carbon impact, and the UC has claimed that it wants to be a climate leader, and so we're forcing them to really put their money with their mouth buses and giving us sustainable transit benefits, making sure that they're encouraging use of sustainable transit methods, public transportation, e-bikes, and then for those who do have to drive from further away, trying to get things like benefits for carpooling and other sustainable modes of transit to campus.
My understanding is that UC has become like the whole of U.S. industry. That is, they want to keep their pay to you as low as possible, and their money on other things like their salaries and big bonuses and salaries to superstar professors to keep them from going to NYU or Harvard or Yale, somebody with huge amounts of money, or lure some people that are at the University of Wisconsin or Michigan where they're on basically a lesser allowance, so they lure them. They also want you to be loyal to the job and like department stores and fast foods. My sense is they want you on call for emergencies or when needed for some other reasons having to do with the demands of the research or the demands of the students. And most of it, too, are asked to be loyal to the research project, who went to work many more, it seems to me, than the 24 hours for which you're paid, which, of course, the students from low-income families who have to work three jobs just to pay for the gas for the car for coming from a long, long way. Anyway, they're very disadvantaged. How do you respond to the regents and administrators and their demands for loyalty and to work more than the 20 hours for which you're paid?
Yeah, I think that this has been one of the lines that we've been seeing in some reporting and definitely from the university is that technically speaking, we're paid for 20 hours of work a week. And that's how they justify these poverty wages. We're paid as graduate research assistants or TAs for 20 hours of work per week. But at the same time, we're also expected, if we're teaching, to be advancing on our research. And that research is really at the core of what the university does. And so between our research, our teaching duties, a lot of us do a ton of other service for the university, whether that's recruiting or talking to incoming graduate students, serving on panels, traveling to conferences to spread the research and impact of the university. Those are all part of the job, but because we're also students, they're kind of able to put those under our student hats, so then they don't feel like they have to pay us because we're learning, we're trainees still. And what we're trying to change is that it is completely unjustified to be able to only pay us for those 20 hours, and they need to pay us enough to live here. Bottom line, hard stop. And so I definitely think that it's right that we're asked to do a lot more than those 20 hours. And if there's any graduate student out there only doing 20 hours of work, I would love to know how you do it. But for the vast, vast majority of people, that is just absolutely not the case. And to your point about university loyalty and ensuring that folks are coming out and doing this work, I think a lot of our faculty will agree also. We had a Berkeley Faculty Association solidarity rally yesterday, and there was a professor who was like, I am overpaid. Like, I do not need as much money as the UC is giving me. And the UC's line on our budget proposals and our economic packages has been that they simply can't afford it. And we know that to be false. They have a multi-billion dollar budget, and they currently allocate maybe 1.5% of that to graduate student instructors, despite the fact that we are the ones meeting with students, leading their discussion sections. There are faculty who often lead large lecture classes, but the folks really doing the work of teaching and meeting students and making sure that they're understanding and developing as young scholars are graduate students. The research that happens often maybe is funded by a grant that a faculty member gets, but ultimately the labor that goes into producing research is by and large conducted by graduate student researchers and by postdoctoral scholars and by academic researchers, these staff positions that we represent across our four units. And so it's pretty clear to us that we are the bulk of the labor that produces these two main products that the UC system prides itself on, research and teaching, yet they're unwilling to actually budget in how they allocate money to the various parts of the university, any sort of actual investment in that bulk workforce that does what it espouses to do. And so what we're really asking for here is a pretty significant shift, and we understand that. And we're just asking for the university to prioritize the workforce that makes the university run.
Kenzo, I used to be a scientist in genetics for a while. As an undergraduate, I was doing research. Anyway, I remember I was told research is 1% genius and 99% perseverance. That there's a huge amount of work, especially in scientific research, and just doing the experiments. And it's you folks who do all of that work. And because you do the work and you're close to it, you consult with these faculty people to, in fact, modify hypotheses, to find other avenues. I remember that in the genetics department. They were really dependent to people doing enormously interesting work in genetic statistics and stuff like that. They were completely dependent on their researchers to help them really refine their hypotheses and understandings, sometimes very greatly.
I think that's absolutely correct. In an ideal world, and I'm really lucky to have an incredibly supportive faculty member, but the process of going through graduate school is one of learning a lot, but also of becoming academic peers with our faculty. I think a lot of faculty members understand that the core of their research group and their contribution to scholarly work is through the labor of the graduate students and the postdocs that work in their groups. And this extends beyond the STEM fields too. Like, there are folks in humanities and social science divisions coming up with new understandings of how our world works, how our systems and societies work, who are creating independent and novel theories of how we understand the world around us, right? And they work with their faculty advisors on making sure that they are referencing the right texts and understand the base theory. But I think it really is the work of graduate students and postdocs who are really pushing forward all of our academic disciplines across fields. And I think there is a fundamental recognition that that is a huge part of what we do at the University of California. Is we are a big R1 institution, which means that we have high research output, and the people who are doing that output are connected to faculty insofar as we have our lab groups or you have a faculty advisor when you enter the university. But ultimately, the high volume of what's coming out is coming out from the postdocs, the academic researchers, and the graduate students. And so I think what you said hits the nail on the head. It's our work that moves this forward. And it's kind of, in a lot of ways, the first strike of its kind in thinking about bringing together all these different types of work that happen at university and striking under a united banner of creating a fair UC. And so that's been part of what's really exciting about this moment.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Kenzo Esquivel, a graduate student doing research in agriculture at UC Berkeley now. He's been teaching there as well, working with faculty, working with students, and he's also one of the union leaders. He's one of the head stewards in the United Auto Workers, UAW Local 2865. Many of them teaching, grading, doing all the consulting on research, getting government grants, but they earn $24,000 a year tops, which in Southern California is not enough to pay the rent, except maybe in hovels way out from the university. So many live out of a car. Many are from modest families and just drop out, actually. One of the many ways that people from well-to-do families manage to fight their way into elite work. So, Kenzo, in that situation, how did these 48,000 and more workers get organized? What's the secret to the success of your various locals?
It's been, in some ways, a multi-year campaign that has resulted in this, but really, if we scale out a little bit, it started in the 90s when we formed our original union, UAW 2865, and so it's been kind of this multi-generational, in terms of graduate student timelines, effort to really build up the strength of our union. And over the last, I would say, 3 to 5 years, there's really been a push to build membership, to create engagement in our union. And then really in the last few years, when we launched the Student Researchers Campaign, which actually came at the heels of working with our local legislators to change a law to ensure that graduate student researchers were able to unionize, gave us kind of the runway to really practice organizing from the bottom up, creating departmental structures of leadership, cultivating these organizing committees that brought in just everyday members of our union to really start to feel like they were plugged in, that they had a unified vision, and that when the time came, could mobilize their coworkers and their colleagues and their departments to strike and to understand the power of our strike. And so I would say that there's nothing new or novel in what we've done here. It's just been hard work organizing our coworkers, having conversations about kind of our conditions, really moving folks and understanding the fact that it's unacceptable for the University of California to continue to exploit its major workforce in the way that it has. And obviously that is premised on how academia has formed in this country since its inception, really, and getting graduate student workers, academic workers to really understand that we have a voice and we can change this institution. And our union is one of the strongest ways that we can really, really strongly change the structural forces that continue this type of exploitation of workers. And so it's really just those conversations, right? It's that peer-to-peer organizing, talking to folks in our departments, and when the time comes, making sure that we have the structures ready to get folks mobilized and out on the picket line and voting in that strike authorization vote. And it's been this gradual process also of becoming more in sync and in line with the postdocs union 5810. And it's been this gradual growing of our infrastructure to make sure that we could work in lockstep and to really win big in a way that has never been seen.
My sense is, knowing a few people in the union, I have the sense that what the union does is what the Wobblies used to do, make everybody leaders, make everybody able to explain how they're exploited. You have to talk about class, it seems to me, how people are exploited and used, and then sometimes, often, in fact, most, discarded, actually.
Yeah, and I mean, that's at the core of it, right, is like to have those conversations. And it's really interesting with academic workers because we're really not conditioned or used to thinking about ourselves as workers in this way, right? A lot of folks in this academic space are the folks who were really good at school, who really are curious thinkers, but in the past, that's not really we necessarily thought of as who the rank and file of the labor movement are. And I think a lot of folks, especially at institutions like the UC, are conditioned to think that just being here is the goal and is good enough and that we don't deserve or need fair or adequate compensation. But what I've heard folks say is that prestige doesn't pay the bills and we are still humans and we are still folks who are struggling to live and really working through kind of that awareness of our graduate students and our academic workers, not just as students, but as workers, right? And building that identity and to get folks to see this bigger picture of like what we're trying to achieve here, what we're trying to win, and their role in that has been a huge part of how we've built this organization.
One additional thing is I have a sense that you folks finally developed the understandings, it's part of it, and when it's recognized, it becomes really an organizing principle of your life, in some ways a consolation, in some ways a motivating vision, that the world we're now living in is now unsustainable, but mm-hmm. that in that great slogan, another world is necessary and possible. And talking about the sort of the human relations that would characterize that better world, I have the sense that that's part of the really successful unions because the people become committed to something larger than themselves or their income.
Totally. And I think that that's one of the things that regardless of what happens in the next few weeks with our contract campaign, that gives me the most hope actually is that through this process, we've built a huge network of leaders that will go on to also lead their own labs and continue in the academic profession or outside, but who now have this analysis, this commitment, and this understanding of how they can continue to reshape academic society and structures and institutions outside of academia as well. And so I think that's one of the things that gives me hope is that we are training just a huge cadre of folks who can go out and continue changing the status quo of academia and of other industries that academics go on to, and shifting how they think about the relation to labor and power and the agency that they can have in reshaping these institutions.
Kenzel, one last thing. How can Oregonians help in this?
Yeah, one of the really cool things has been to see how academics at other universities who either are or not yet unionized are getting inspired by this campaign. And so one thing I would say is I don't know much about the universities up in Oregon, but if there comes a time that folks up there are starting to think about either unionizing or organizing around a big contract campaign, to just be up to date on that and engaged. In this moment, we do have a hardship fund set up, and so we do have this financial contribution that folks can plug into. And then I would say just amplifying the media that's coming out around this. I mean, a lot of it's pretty damning of the university and kind of how it's approached negotiations with us at the table. And so just continuing to really push this public eye on the university, because I think that their reputation is that they care profoundly about recruiting top students and students from inside and outside California, right? And so the more damage that we can do to institutional reputation, the more pressure I think that they'll feel to come to the bargaining table in good faith. And so I would say that's the last thing, is just continuing to push and talk about our campaign with folks you know in your circles. I really appreciate you inviting me here to chat about it. And so thanks for having me.
Thank you, Kenzel Esquivel. 48,000 grad students, researchers, tutors, many others who do the work of the California system. Their strike, it's inspiring. Thanks for talking to us.